Hello, everyone. It's been a nice, lengthy session. So please feel free to stand up, stretch if you'd like, walk around the room. I'd like to convince the APHA to set up little standing tables at their meetings as an alternative to sitting all the time. My name is Albert Cherillion. I'm the Senior Director for Family and Community Health with the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. This is a membership group which represents all of the chief health commissioners throughout the country. It has about 59 members. We have 59 members. We're not interested in getting more. Most of our members, 55%, are cabinet level officials. The other 45% exist within an umbrella structure. My work at ASTO ranges from primary care and public health integration into some aging caregiver research, working in Million Hearts, the operational lead on several national initiatives, and because of that, I have nothing to disclose. I have no time to do anything else. What I would like to do is start my presentation with a report that came out in March of 2012 from the Institute of Medicine. It concerned the integration of primary care and public health. It was actually funded by the CDC and by HRSA, alternately as a public health and a primary care organization, even though it could be said that HRSA calls itself now a public health organization. It spoke to the necessity of integration to alleviate pressures on both a primary care system, but also to alleviate some of the shortfalls of the public health system, which is suffering severe budget cuts at the state and local levels. It was a very comprehensive approach with some examples, but spoke to some of the main factors that get to the success of integration, including the four that are listed here, or the five. Interestingly enough, there is a chart that was included there, and I think that the goal of the report was to help agencies move from the isolation more to the partnership piece of this, but not toward merger, because we've seen it where public health departments have adopted primary care services, some becoming federally qualified health centers, but then have let go of public health services, and therefore the public health disappears. So we do not want the merger. We do want to move toward that partnership piece, and speaking with the American Academy of Family Physicians, a former vice president there spoke to interface as a good description for what we're looking for in the partnership between primary care and public health. As a follow-up to this report that was released in March of 2012, ASTO actually conducted a strategic mapping session with the Institute of Medicine. Now, a strategic map is actually a business model, a business concept. It was issued by two authors from the Harvard School of Business, Kaplan and Norton, in the 90s, and has been used successfully in business. The balanced scorecard is a part of their write-ups. The strategic mapping session has been used successfully by ASTO to support strategic planning and strategic thinking in public health improvement for the last few years. There is an ASTO strategic map for the organization. We also have a map for health equity, and we also have a map for prescription drug overdose. This is the map for primary care and public health integration. Now, what's unique about this map is that it is not an organizational map. Rather, it is a multi-organizational map. We try to make sure that as many organizations as possible can claim and use this map. We have a collaborative, the ASTO-supported Primary Care and Public Health Collaborative, which was born from this map with 50 organizations and close to 100 members now that we hope and would like to think are using this map. The way it works is there is a central challenge at the top in the red circle. There are the priorities, which are the blue boxes beneath, and the objectives beneath those blue boxes are pretty much detailed the work to be done. The gold bars, which are underneath the entire map, are what's called cross-cutting objectives, which reach across all the priorities, and again speak to that work to be done, which overlaps in many different areas. The colored boxes that you see there highlight the priorities from the strategic map, and were broken out in the first year into four different tracks of work committees. You'll see the four here. Each has a primary care and a public health co-chair. They were launched at different parts and different times in the order, partly because of the focus areas at which they were being considered. Successes was first, value proposition or making the business case for integration was second. Resources was third, and then the last one that was launched was the Measures Committee. Each one not only works to advance integration, but embodies that integration because of that primary care and public health co-chair. We'll see here across that earlier chart where each committee stands from my perspective right now. Some are much further along than others. Measurements for learning is a very significant lift when we look at the different projects happening federally and nationally and how these projects can align. But what I'd like to do is look at the successes part, and that will be the goal of this presentation, is to examine some of the work from that successes part. Two of the different boxes from that strategic map are highlighted here, that chance to identify what works, but also to implement the mechanism. We'll be talking about that mechanism, be talking about some of the work and some of the interpretation from the story submitted through that mechanism, and some of the follow-up work that's taken place. There is the committee chair, Sharon Moffitt, who is the chief of health promotion and prevention at ASTHO, our organization, and then Dr. Lloyd Michener, who is a professor at Duke University at the School of Medicine. And we'll see that the committee itself, the track of work committee, is made up of membership of quite a few different organizations and has robust participation. When we say SHO-NH for Dr. Montero, that is the state health official for New Hampshire. We have several different state health officials that were a part of this, including Dr. Wimslow for Ohio, Dr. Rattay for Delaware, and several others that were a part of it, Dr. Moser for Kansas. The first step was actually to create the tool. This did take time. There was a committee effort, and it's kind of like building a horse by committee. Getting to what actually works does take some effort. The balance was between getting something that would be readily accessible and usable, but also be comprehensive in its scope in terms of what it's trying to capture. We wanted to make it as easy to use with as many quantitative components, but we also wanted it to be successful enough to be able to adequately capture what was happening in integration across the country. Therefore, there was a very strong qualitative part to it. It was also decided that for ease of use, and for expediency in filling it out, because so many people that are doing this good work are so busy, that we wanted to make sure that they could move through the form quickly, and then there would be a follow-up interview later based on the need to capture other information. And then there was a chance to actually place it in a way and in a manner that would be easily accessible. And so what you'll see here is the link to the successes form. And when you click this link, it brings you to this page, which is a very easy to read, easy to navigate, and access page. The first is actually the tool itself, which is a Qualtrics-based survey instrument, which is accessed via the internet. For those that do not have easy access to the internet and do not feel comfortable accessing a survey tool, there is a PDF form, which is also submitted up there. And then, to help with the participation, we created a link which would allow people to see exactly what they submitted within 24 hours of their submitting it. This was not a mechanical or electronic mechanism. This was handled in-house by a very responsive staff. And this is a copy of the PDF form. You can get an idea of the questions that we are asking and the information that we are trying to capture. Basic demographic information, the location of the integration that was actually taking place, a description of agencies, as well as a description of where the project was at its beginning and where it is currently on that integration-related chart. And again, quite a bit of qualitative information. So the results, we have 86 stories that were captured with consistent themes around things like chronic disease and maternal and child health, but also immunizations and infectious disease. It really did go across the scope of different departments of health and primary care practices. Many stories from single jurisdictions, including stories from New Hampshire, New York, California. A lot of people wanted to share the good work that was happening. And stories submitted from both public health and from primary care. Strong, robust participation in different national agencies and their localized counterparts representing physicians, including the American Academy of Family Physicians, American Academy of Pediatrics, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, etc. And then examples from the national, state, and local efforts. Important themes: multi-sector leadership is a part of these stories, building on existing efforts. Nothing was from the ground up, just like our project. We want to promote integration, but we realize it was not from the ground up effort. Building relationships, the measuring of success was important to the claiming of success. The value proposition helped toward sustainability, and that aligning of resources was instrumental. I'd like now, though, to work into the how of the integration, that we remember from the Iowan report that these were the components: population health, community engagement, aligned leadership, sustainability, and that use of data and analysis. And now I'd like to burrow in to see how these components work in some different examples. The first, in population health improvement, that chance to use data effectively, a strong public health part of this, how it could be used to look and give providers a bigger picture to the patients that they were serving, or hospitals to the different clients they were serving within different jurisdictions. What were the main problems of different zip codes? What were the main problems of some different boroughs or areas of service? And how could this information be leveraged at the provider level? Recognizing the scope of public health and its impact and the information systems at hand, communications tools that were actually geared to help providers, created by public health, cultural competency, but not being bogged down by version, something that would work. And then strategic initiatives, for example, in Louisiana, getting different tools, population health level tools, to help providers link their patients to different services. In sum, a supportive primary care to see more than one patient at a time, to see that perspective. For community engagement, types of provider partners, local hospitals are a good example from Pennsylvania. Linkages with hospital systems and trauma care in Mississippi, a comprehensive trauma care model that was set up to cover the state with very little funding, with strong partnership from public safety. And then a Central Health Commons partnership with federally qualified health centers in New Mexico. In sum, community at all levels and with many sectors, at many levels, really showing the value and the sustainability of integration at a national level, which included federal, state, and local levels working together. Aligned leadership, a good example with Dr. Nero Shah in New York with an improvement plan, the State Health Improvement Plan, and actually aligning with different leaders within a state, including hospital, local health, and provider leaders. I think one of the most powerful partnerships was with New York City and Mayor Bloomberg's appointment, Dr. Tom Farley, who is a local health official in New York. And when the health official of New York and the health official of New York State speak together, it does resonate. The Virginia Plan, first initiative, leadership across sectors, with Medicaid, with state and local and community leaders coming together. In sum, a chance to leverage political will and to use evidence and to use data to make a difference. And this is really what helped get to sustainability. Most of the stories collected had examples of efforts that took place over several years. That engaged leadership was important. The community engagement and that from the ground up part of it was essential. And then those multi-sector partnerships. Originally, I'm from New Orleans, and I was there for Katrina. And after Katrina, there were several things that were launched that actually withered away when important people left. What we found with these integration efforts is that when you bring those partnerships across different levels and different sectors, and you bring in that leadership, and you have that top-down and the bottom-up perspective, you can make that project last. And then the last part, data use and sharing, many examples from across the country, tools for primary care providers, giving that broader perspective of that population health level of service and outcomes achievement, that linkage to service. California had a helpline and EMR referrals that allowed different hospitals to actually look at other things that were offered in their area and link patients to those services. And then the coordination of services with the Missouri Time Critical Diagnosis Project. And the last piece I'd like to say is, everybody's working so hard and scrambling so fast. in this health transformation world that we're living in. What was really helpful to see were there were a couple of projects that were actually capturing the data, writing it up, and informing the evidence, which is over and above the work that they normally do and the work that they felt that they were called to do. This was an extra step for them to inform the evidence and to help the work that they were doing speak to a longer life. So the use of the stories, this mechanism was used to support the ASLO President's Challenge in 2012-2013. Our president was our member from New Hampshire, Dr. Jose Montero. He challenged all of the states, all of the members, to submit one story of integration, and this mechanism was used to support that challenge metric. The CDC federal level Have You Shared initiative. This project has gone to support that federal initiative. And then the de Beaumont-Duke playbook was closely aligned with the ASLO-supported Primary Care and Public Health Collaborative. They also used the Capturing Successes tool, and they are now in a gamma test of this playbook, which will be used by primary care and public health practitioners that will help give them resources and inform by the stories that we collected with this project. Next steps, ongoing support, linkage for the de Beaumont playbook, linkage to other federal initiatives, including the Million Hearts CMS CDC initiative, building out more details from those stories, getting into some case studies, peeling the layers off the onion, dissemination of results, and then building out tools and technical assistance from some of these lessons. If there was something that worked in one area, how can it be leveraged to work effectively in another one? And I think specifically about some of these dashboards that were created for providers. What do these look like, and how can these be helpful across jurisdictions? And of course, the ongoing collection of stories. We are not finished. It is an indefinite project on that level. The last thing I'd like to say is that one of our members, Dr. John Dreisner, mentions public health as a team sport. And I'm up here speaking on behalf of the efforts of several people, one of which is here today, Judy Chandler-Rugel, who's a part of our team, but also the entire ASLO and Duke staff, which were a part of drawing up and writing these stories and doing the follow-up interviews, but also the Successes Committee and the entire ASLO-supported Primary Care and Public Health Collaborative. And with that, happy to answer any questions. Yes?
I noticed from the very beginning of your talk that just got my attention. Mm-hmm. You referenced the Institute of Medicine study, and then you went on to say we're reflecting on should public health merge with primary care? Mm-hmm. You said no, because public health function has to be preserved. I'm from behavioral health. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine with the ACA, all we're talking about is behavioral health and primary care merging. And I'm actually working on the county level now. I used to do research and policy.
Okay.
And people, our public health, big public health departments, county public health departments, are seriously considering merging with mm-hmm. primary care and adopting NCQA standards and becoming a managed care network. And what I think in the back of my mind is no, we have a public health responsibility. So I'm just wondering where I can get the thinking of the people that said that so clearly said it's important that public health should retain its own identity.
I would go back to the IOM, and I would go to the 10 essential services is what I would do. That is about as public health as you get. Now, I think that there's also Institute of Medicine, 10 essential services. That's correct. And I would also say there's a public health academic component of that where they've captured what public health is pretty effectively. I was in a meeting yesterday with the ASPPH, and they talked about that MPH as the workhorse degree for public health and the American or the Association for Schools and Programs of Public Health. So they are the membership group of the entire of all the public health schools throughout the country, and now programs, those that may exist within other schools. But they're very good at identifying public health as something other. Now, I will say about behavioral health as well, there's opportunities not just on the integration with primary care, but we like to speak strongly to the integration of behavioral health with public health.
That's the second piece.
Okay. Okay.
And that's one of the things we're going to try and work on nationally through the efforts of the section to try and clarify the narrative mm-hmm. around why behavioral health is a public health. I can't even say the word. It's so foreign, so strange.
Right.
A public health issue.
And I think public health doesn't really understand how behavioral health works and the components of it, that you have some clinical parts to it, and you also have some real strong practice parts and the different professions within the mental health or behavioral health world. I think that there's education to be had for both parts. Sure.
You guys are welcome to talk after as long as you want.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm
happy to.
I'm just nervous about the next group wanting to come in.
Oh, yeah.
You've got about 3 minutes.
Go ahead. It's very hard, and I think that one of the perspectives that we walked into this work was so helpful for us is just how overtaxed primary care is and what those battles are on the front lines in terms of using good information and actually helping the patients on that level. I think that there are some things that we've seen across the country which are small steps, which are helpful, and I do think about some of the work happening around Million Hearts and improving hypertension and some of the different steps that are happening out of some community health centers. It's an ongoing struggle in terms of how you can actually get some of these services paid for, but I think there's some things that can be done which can kind of move in that direction while the conversations are had with Medicaid and with some of these other federal or public payer entities. In the meantime, I do think that insurance is getting it, and I think that they understand, and this is what we're seeing more and more. They know that if they pay a little bit here, they're going to save a lot right over here. I think that it's framing. I mean, I think the story that comes from the primary care level is very effective at saying, I don't know, we can increase utilization, and we can increase screening and these kinds of things, and that'll actually reduce your costs. And that was seen in broader strokes in New York with Dr. Shah. I think that speaking to how do you say evidence-based medicine. I think in the use of evidence-based medicine, but I think speaking to that utilization part of it would probably be the best bet in terms of making the argument for payment for those kinds of services. Is that helpful?
Yeah,
and I'm happy to be a resource for you too. Yeah, sir.
Because I believe that we will get washed out in the population. I mean, because I'm reading all about population health and I understand care management, et cetera. And I see words, but I do not see actions that make me believe confidently that healthcare, health professions get it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that my experience in this work of primary care is that they're so busy with the work that they're doing in some cases, but I also think that the ones that I've seen that when they're engaged, then they say, wow, we love that work and we love that tool and we love this support and we love these ideas, because I don't think that there was training that was a part of their education to begin with, but I think that that's changing with the schools of medicine as well. I mean, I think the way that our president framed it was they called it a reintegration of public health and health care. And what he was trying to do, and in fact he said envisioning the Department of Health of the future, but he's going back and trying to look at a time when things weren't so chunked out in the health system. The great benefits of medicine is that it's so tangible and so measurable and so quantitative. The bad thing about public health, and you see it on the bus ride back and forth to your hotel, is that it's public health is successful when nothing happens. And that's the uphill thing for public health. Now, I think that there's data that's coming about. There's the story piece, which is a big part of this, is getting these examples up in front of people is what's going to be most effective at actually creating a certain political will. We found that political will is invaluable at whatever level. And to get the recognition that the health system working together is really the ideal. It's the ideal for everybody. You want public health to go do your inspections in your restaurants. You want them to help support immunization. You want the measurement of your statewide health levels. But then you also get sick, and I want to go see a doctor. I mean,
a real quick one.
Yeah, sure.
I'm from Canada, so I really enjoyed your presentation. I'm from where I come from, Quebec, and we have interesting public health policy. So I believe that your reflections and thinking on the interface between public health and private care is more advanced here. And I'd be interested to know, of the stories that you've collected so far, I'd like to know what the impetus behind these stories of having primary care and public health get together and talk, because that's the real challenge, right? Just getting them around the table.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've seen in your stories, what's the emerging impetus? What gets people together?
Well, I would say there's a lot of different things that come to mind. I think money is a certain part of it. I mean, the system is overwhelmed, and they're looking for answers. There's budget cuts. Health departments are losing money, and they're losing personnel left and right. And they cast out and about to see how they can continue the work that they're doing without that money. That's one thing. Leadership, I think, is on target. You have a lot of different leaders in this, which are clinicians, nurses, MDs, and like our earlier speaker, they get it. They know. And like our questioner in the back, they understand that one patient at a time, they did it. They've done it. They did one patient at a time. And they worked hard. And now, how can they work in a way that's a more effective and less stressful in their practice on who they are, and really leverage the pieces that are out there. So those are two things that come to mind. I think that there's some great people out there that are really speaking to the success of this work, and I think that there's a momentum that's happening. There's a transformation in our system that's happening right now. It's a very exciting time to be a part of this. ACA is a part of it. But it happened without the ACA. We have a lot of states that are not implementing the ACA, but it's happening there. And it's going to be good to pay attention to how it happens and how we can steal. Yeah.
I want to thank all of you for some wonderful presentations. We really, up front we were thinking, how are these all going to fit together? But they do in terms of the energy and the interest in improving people's health care in a lot of different ways. So thank you all very, very much.